He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
All right. Wrap up a 10-inch spike, make it a 12-inch spike, and bend that thing double overhand. We got Brett Bracken on the show. Welcome to the show, Brett.
Hey, good to be here, bud.
All right, so right off the top, like I've been doing, we got a couple announcements. So first off, most importantly, I just worked out something really cool with Harito. So if you guys want to save 10% and you're buying bolts from Jan, you're going to use promo code CHEERS, CHEERS. And this is really cool because Jan is kind enough to give you guys 10% off and 5% is getting kicked back to me in support of the show. So I really appreciate that from Jan, and make sure you guys go get on those lists. We got rosters for just about everything. They're snapping all the styles, bare hand, double overhand. Like to see someone else get that 12.9 bolt. That'd be amazing. So go to Harito and get some bolts. We also have Barrel Strength Systems, former guest Gil Goodman, Squeezus. You guys want to save 10%? Use promo code BEYOND. He also has a really cool thing going on. If you buy the flask and you can do a pinch pull-up, you're going to get yourself on a roster. There's only like 6 people on that roster. So buy the flask, hang that thing off something, and do a pull-up so you can get on that roster. Lastly, we're going to have stuff going on all winter from David Horn. So if you're not on Steel Shredder on Facebook, get on it. He's got grip contests coming, and he's also got the Steel Shredders. And last thing is I've started an unofficial roster of people who have snapped horseshoes. So if you have snapped a horseshoe, hit me up. I'll throw you on my list. I don't need a video. It's unofficial, like I said. I just think it's a cool feat, and I want to keep track of who's doing them, because I know at one time that was like pretty unheard of. And just as things evolve, my friend Dave Nisbet, Caveman Daveman up in Canada, snapped a St. Croix Ultralight 2 in 45 seconds. So things are advancing. All right, let's get into it. Brett, tell me about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
And I may be misquoting this, but remembering this part, but didn't Andre the Giant bend something, or it might have been fictitional in The Princess Bride, the movie?
Oh, you know what? I've never seen that movie, and my wife tells me all the time that I need to see it. It's funny.
And like, I remember seeing this as a kid, tiny kid.
I got to check it.
And I may be misremembering completely. If it wasn't that, it was probably like some of the old World's Strongest Man competitions. Seeing that for the first time when it came on ESPN, like at 10 o'clock at night when I'm a kid.
Yeah.
Sitting up watching sports with my pops.
Nice. So. And how about your own journey? What was your introduction to steel bending, and how did you decide to get into it?
Yeah, so the first time I ever seen it in person was in January of 2014. I remember this because I was at the Strong First certification in Nashville, Tennessee, with David Whitley.
Okay.
And we were in a break, and these two gentlemen were off to the side, and they were playing with some nails and tearing cards, and I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I walked over and I was like, show me how to do that. And they were bending like 6-inch timber spikes.
Yep.
And so it's like, all right, how do I do it? And I wrapped it up and I'm like, you do it like this? And they're like, yeah. And then I'd already bent it.
Nice.
But it was cool. It was awesome. And I came home and I went straight to the True Value down the street, and I took it in. I was like, I need to find a box of these. And the guy was like, look in the back, they're over there. So I bought a box, and that over that next 2 weeks, I think I bent every nail in the box. and then I didn't pick it up again until 2016. And I was like, I got really fast into it. And I was like, well, what's next? I didn't know. I had no clue. And then I kind of sat down and kind of scoured the internet and kind of progressed from there.
Nice. So in 2014, you just ripped through that box of timber spikes, and then that kind of fizzled out for that moment.
Oh, I didn't know what else. I didn't know what was next.
Okay.
I had no clue. Like I was like, all right, what do you get after timber spikes?
Interesting.
And then Iron Mind magazine showed up at the gym one day, and I was like, oh, what's the bag of nails? Let's order it. So
yeah,
And I think that was 2016. Those showed up and I ordered a bag of those and then kind of progressed from there.
Perfect. So when you saw Whitley and those guys bending them, did they have proper wraps and everything like that? Or?
Oh, yeah. So it wasn't actually Dave. Dave was running the thing. And so he was talking to someone helping. The two guys were Mark Burnett and Kip Scott. And I think they had just finished going to Dennis Rogers, old time Strongman University thing. They were talking about it. Like, oh, you should check this guy out. And they had like some leather wraps and things like that. And they were just playing around with it off at the side.
Nice.
But yeah, it was instantly addictive.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I kind of finally slowly figured out what was the progressions over the next time period.
Cool. So what was your athletic background coming up, if you had one as a kid and stuff?
Oh, yeah. So if you could compete in it, I probably tried to. Cool. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina. So, you know, just like most kids, you played football and baseball and a little bit of basketball. But I was actually ran Division I college track. That was my nice. Forte. I was a pole vaulter and a decathlete.
Right on.
Then after college, I got into beach volleyball because I live here at the beach and, you know, girls were cute in bikinis and it was easy way to talk to them.
Cool.
And then I progressed into the Highland Games. I did that off and on for a little while over the last few years. I still do it occasionally. But that was mostly my background there for the most part.
Nice. And you run or co-own a gym down there, right?
I co-own Charleston Kettlebell Club. Cool. My partner, Mike Fickling, and myself.
Right on.
We opened we originally were Progressive Fitness, and then 2014 when we partnered up, we changed the name and kind of rebranded the concepts and made it a little bit different.
Cool. Was it 2014 when you started to get into the kettlebell stuff, or were you into that already before that?
I was already into it a little bit. I've been playing with them since about 2010. I played around with it, but at the time, all the stuff was RKC, and nothing against RKC. I just wasn't motivated to go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to play outside and do that at that point in time. I was too busy chasing other strength goals I was looking into.
Cool.
And then around 2012, I got serious about kettlebells and pursued the certification stuff in 2014. Nice.
What were the other strength goals that you had going on at the time? Were you just traditional heavy lifts? Were you ever into powerlifting and stuff? Or
I was more into Olympic lifting. I was chasing a 315 power clean.
Cool.
At the time. And then I was going around for that 275 snatch goal. It was just something arbitrary that was thrown out there to me.
Yeah.
Those fell pretty well once I actually focused on them. That was a lot of fun.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm gathering as I interview more and more people, generally people's backgrounds, a lot of rock climbers, a lot of power lifters, and then a good amount of grapplers too. And sometimes a mixed bag of things. So I guess it makes sense to, you know, navigate your way into the grip world from those things.
Yeah. Well, with pole vaulting, you know, you're hanging on to a stick between 14 and 17 feet long and flinging yourself into the air. So I had a pretty strong grip from that over
That's
the
cool.
years.
That's real cool. And the Highland Games, my friend, just in a virtual capacity, but a few of the guys that we all started bending this year around the same time, Josh Goldthorpe, Chuck and Canuck is his Instagram handle.
Yeah.
Been crushing big steel double over. He's big into the Highland Games for sure.
Yeah. I listened to that episode and I don't follow the pro class very much, but I did see he was pro and he has pretty legit numbers. I'd be interested to talk to him and see once he starts throwing again, how this changed his ability to throw.
Yeah. I asked him when he was on, and he hasn't done it in a competitive sense yet, but he said just from gripping the pads so much on these big double overhand bends, he felt like his fingers were just like a little more, there was like a little more tension on them, like pulling inward, so like the tendon shortened or something. So he feels like he's going to have a little bit more grip on it. So that's pretty interesting. That's something that fascinates me with this whole thing is like, although getting the certifications and pushing yourself and hitting the PRs on the bars and stuff like that, it's very interesting. And it's like, certainly like captivated me, but like I, at the heart of this, I'm most interested in it as a training modality, you know, like, will I be a better grappler when I return?
I would venture to say, yes, you're definitely going to be much better just because the amount of tension you learn how to hold and constant pressure. I think you're going to surprise yourself when you get back on the mat. You're going to start crushing guys. They're not going to know what to do.
I know. I've said it before, but it's with all my Instagram posts and stuff like that. I was my forte was sort of leg locking people, and everybody was like, I'm never letting you near my feet again. It's like a picture of a bent wrench, you know, or something.
Gotcha.
So how'd the bag of nails go? I had the same experience. What were you able to bend right up to when you got that bag? Did you make it up to blue or?
I'm probably one of those exceptions. I was able to take the red to just past 90.
Wow.
It was in a V, but it was not closed. It was probably, I remember right, it was 3.5-inch spread.
Cool.
I remember measuring. I had no clue what I was doing at all.
Yeah.
I was like, I actually have that video somewhere the first time I went at that thing. Wow. And it's one of those, like, you're just grunting and spitting and just cursing your way. And you don't know, I didn't use chalk. I didn't know I was supposed to use chalk. And but I got it about 90 degrees, a little past 90. I was like, so about 3.5-4-inch spread. And it was, and after that, I was like, all right, now I got to figure out how to bend this thing. Like, how you close it, you know?
Wow. That's cool. And that was with double overhand?
Yes. I didn't know anything else. Like, I'd never seen any other style until playing on the internet, kind of looked it up and figured it out from there.
Interesting. And the box of timber spikes you did, that was all double over, I assume, too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's funny because I feel like, although it certainly is the most powerful style unbraced, it seems like that it, even though I had watched many, many videos and knew that was the case, the mobility I had in my shoulders, potentially from playing a very crunched jiu-jitsu guard game, it's felt so uncomfortable that I knew that's how I should do it. But then when I start, I think I, even with the yellow nail, even though I'm not a good reverse bender at all, it just felt more instinctual to kind of kink it like that and then finish it like that. The initial kink double overhand took a tremendous amount of practice and technical training for me.
Well, saying that, like you guys in that posture, you guys have a nice kyphotic posture. You hunch over, you roll in. So even if you could get your shoulders, you're not able to get that thoracic extension and really open up. You can't get into position. So like that thoracic mobility as well as shoulder mobility play a huge deal in those double overhand bends.
I'd like to probably get into it more, but since we're on it right now, what are some things people say, face pulls, other guys say like get some, I forget what the material was, but what's some suggestions you have as a trainer for guys that are struggling with that shoulder mobility for double overhand?
So I was a big fan of, you go ahead and get the big bar, 10-inch bar, 12-inch bar, 8-inch bar, because a lot of times people have a hard time pulling that 7-inch bar into position as well. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and get it and wrap it and just set it up and then get in front of a mirror and just pull it into position and lift the chest, try to get that thoracic extension and just kind of hold it, address it, put a little pressure, see where your body's at, and then lay it down and leave it there. Come back a few minutes later, a couple hours later, and pick it up and just pull it in position and see what happens.
Gotcha.
That was one of the big things for me when it started getting into the long bars, double overhand. Like, how do I get that into that spread or that extension?
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. Are you holding it for any position of time or just till you feel comfortable and you feel like you could put a little torque on it?
So yeah, basically that. So I'm like, all right, where does it need to be? I get it in position. All right. And then apply a little pressure. Does it move out of position? If it does, let all find that position again.
Yeah.
Get set, hold it, and then let it go. And I hold it for like a 3-5 count in my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And slowly started ramping the pressure up. and kind of feeling what would happen as I increase the pressure, mm-hmm. we are our natural indication of our bodies to find the path of least resistance or what right. we feel is. So we'll fall right back out into a bad motor pattern. So I had to retrain the motor pattern for that whole setup.
You know, it's funny you say that about like finding the path of least resistance and coming out of form and all this. And I'm speaking from a total novice here mm-hmm. in the grip world, but for grip stuff, I feel like it's funny. I feel like it's almost impossible, like say on a rolling handle or like a pinch, mm-hmm. I feel like there's such a harsh cutoff where it's like, you could do 35 pounds and you put 36 on and no matter if you even want to come out of position, that thing's not moving. Have you had that experience?
A little bit. I haven't done a ton of grip training. Like okay. I found myself, I stumbled into a grip contest about 3 years ago uh-huh. at an event called Europa. I was invited up to do Moss wrestling. If you haven't done Moss wrestling, you can check that out.
I had Clay Edgen on the show and he was talking about it a little bit and I've seen a few things. It looks cool.
And I got invited up by a buddy of mine who's Chad Clark, who promotes a lot of that. And cool. So I did it and he's like, you got to stay the next day and do the grip contest. And first time ever playing with the Rolling Thunder and uh-huh. What's the hub? Yeah. The Iron Mind hub.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I noticed that like you get to that point and you're like, you're all fired up and you're going, yeah. and all of a sudden you put that extra 1.5-2 pound plate on. You're like, what just happened?
Yeah. It's so yeah. strange. It's just like a very finite cutoff where it's like, even if you wanted to, like, it's interesting. It's like, even if you were going to sacrifice your body for it or something, you know, like mm-hmm. you just don't even have that option. It just doesn't move. It's, yep. it's so interesting like that. So take me back to, so you kinked the red to 90 and then mm-hmm. what was the journey like from there?
From there, it was like finding someone, because I think this is circa 2016. So there were the only people I could find on the internet was Dave Whitley, Chris Ryder and Dennis Rogers that considered would be a coach.
Okay.
And so I reached out to a couple of those guys via email and, just to like, get some communication, and Chris was the only one to respond right away. So I called him and we sat down and chatted and took a couple of lessons with him. And he's like, all right, these are your progressions. And so I spent, I got back into it in August of 2006. And then that January, 2017, I certified the red nail.
Nice.
But I got in August, by August, September, I was closing red nails, uh-huh. but I like to own things completely.
Yeah.
and so when I did my red nail certification, it was like a joke to some level.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, that's it. I'm like, oh, that was a lot of work for like 5 seconds or less.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yep. So did you continue on past there and start cutting reds down and, or like what was, well, obviously you got into the spike bending, but mm-hmm. where'd you go after completing the red certification?
So after that, took in, kind of played with some of the other strongman feats. I think that was me. Some of the other strongman feats. I got into playing with horseshoes. Cool. When you're talking about snapping horseshoes, I have snapped one.
All right.
Once before. I'll get you on that. Cool. That was fun. Putting those into hards, putting them into like paper clips.
Yep.
Tearing foam book cards. And just wanted to learn how to do it and see what it's like. So
yeah.
took a few more lessons with Chris on those things. And then nail driving. That was interesting.
Okay.
Not really my forte.
Yeah.
Like driving the nail wasn't the mental block. It was just like how much my hands hurt later.
Oh yeah.
From like that constant just pounding into the board.
Yeah.
I also probably didn't have the best quality like nails that I found.
Sure.
And then I was like, all right, I'm tired of this stuff. So I got into scrolling. If you're into grappling, you should get into scrolling.
Done some. Yeah. It's been recommended to me. I think Bud Jeffries mm-hmm. said specifically for the grappling. Don Cummings has also. I've done some, nothing too large, just because I've of what I've ordered. But I like it, and I've always been a pretty artistic guy between music mm-hmm. and drawing and this and that, whatever. But so I do enjoy the scrolling quite a lot. It's cool.
Yeah. The only recommendation I can give you on that: start short, like that 4 foot range.
Yep.
Slowly add a little bit as you get ready and get comfortable.
Yeah.
Remember.
All I've done actually is just because I was training for the red nail. So I had like 5/16 cold roll. Actually, I got hot rolled just to be like a little easier. So I had that in 4 foot lengths that I've made like little scrolls out of, which was real cool and fun.
Cool. Remind me, and I'll give you a hint that you, if you still have some of that, I can give you something that you might enjoy playing with.
Okay.
On the, because it's round, correct?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. You'll like this. It's even cooler with, it's cooler with square, but round is really neat. So from there, it was like I started chasing just bigger nails. I never really enjoyed bending short stuff. Like,
interesting.
To me, six inches is like, all right, that's short as I want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Less than that, it just doesn't feel right in my hands. Okay. I got pretty long arms.
Yeah.
And I got these long, crazy fingers and palms. So it just never felt like I couldn't hold it. It just didn't feel good to me.
Yeah.
So I just like stuck around that 8-inch. I played around chasing the gold nail for a little while.
Okay.
Got close ish. I could get it to about 4-inch spread, and then it just got frozen, and then I could crush it down to about 3 with assistance, and then I could close it. So from about 4 inches to 3 inches, that's where I got stuck.
Wow.
And then, which was big. I don't know if it was mental, physical, what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I got someone, Chris, I stay in communication with him. He's a good friend of mine now. Mm-hmm. And, he kind of provoked me to try to bend a 10 inch bar.
Cool.
So that started that journey and then turned into chasing 12 inch bars.
Wow. Did you do an 8 before the 10?
Now I played around with 8s.
Okay.
They're a beast depending on what brand you get.
Yeah. It's funny because my friend, Devin Hoover is, keeping an unofficial roster of anyone who's bent one of those ADD mm-hmm. spikes, unbraced. And it seems like there's quite a variety and difficulty of those, because when I first started, I just kind of went on a spree at Home Depot and I picked up like 3 of these things, and it was like quite a while before I could even do one of those things kinked on my knee and then finished with a leg crush. It was very mm-hmm. difficult. So yeah. Doing one double overhand sounds insane.
Yeah. So my big suggestion is when you find something you like, buy it all, or buy as much of it as you think you can find.
Yeah.
I spent many a day sitting in Home Depot and Lowe's dumping their nails out onto the floor. Literally, and the guys like walking by, and I'm like, I got the bent one that I just bent, and I'm looking at all the heads, and I'm staring at it, and I'm flipping it over. I'm like, that's right, that's wrong. And I like, I went through thousands of nails just sitting there over the course of years.
Yep.
And just trying to find what I wanted and kept it.
Yeah. So the progression was there. So you got the 10-inch spike, mm-hmm. and then you started. Were you just like, were you doing anything to bridge that gap between the 10 and the 12? Or did you get like 3/8 stock and cut it in
so
between?
So I would just buy the spikes and cut them down.
Okay.
Cut the tip off of it and then, measure it out.
Yeah.
Get it with the grinder to clean up the end. So just tear my wraps up and just kept progressing. I did play with 3/8 stock, hot rolled and cold rolled at that length. I have a buddy that's a blacksmith, so I order a lot of my metal through that guy.
Nice.
It's way cheaper that way.
Yeah, I bet. So then how long did it take till you got the 12-inch spike?
So let's see. I bent the 12-inch spike the first day, not the first time I touched it.
Okay.
The first day I got it, was the first thing I was at Chris's house. I actually had went to the dinner that you're going to ask about, or the cookout, which I'm not going to ask about later. And I went back and stayed the weekend at the hotel in Chris's hometown and went to his house and trained with him. And he's like, here, bend this. And I was like, all right, why not? And I fought with this thing and it was like trying to find that position, like I was just talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's all about, like, if you can lock it into place and get it to go, it's going to go.
Yeah.
The hard part for most people is getting it to go, because it's the easiest crush you're going to do.
Yeah.
Once it's over, because it's so dang long.
Yeah.
But it's getting it started. And I pick it up every couple of hours we were training, and then I finally was in the day. I'm like, I'm gonna bend this thing. And I just stayed on it until it bent.
Nice.
And after that, it was like it clicked. I was like, oh, that's how I have to hold it.
All right.
And then I went home and went to Home Depot and Lowe's and bought every 12-inch spike that looked like it, and and I went to town on it for the next couple months.
Cool.
So
What kind of wraps were you using, just out of curiosity?
And... So I was using some wraps that were leather. They were 4x5s or 10x5s.
Okay, nice.
So they're 10.
And where were you marking the bar, or do you even mark the bar?
I don't mark the bars. Like occasionally I do mark the bars, but most of the time it depends on the length of the bar. I kind of have a mark that gets worn into my wrap. I'm like, all right, it's in there.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I was thinking like, well, how much? So actually, I guess I could ask the question in this way. How much overhang did you have on a bar that long? Were you hanging your wraps over at all or not really?
Let's see. There's probably about 1.5 inches hanging off.
Oh, okay. So mostly.
Yeah, because generally set up, most bars about at this point in my palm.
Wow.
So the pinky's off, and then I lock down on it.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Even on a 7-inch?
It actually may come a little more, but this finger's still barely touching that bar, like almost all the bars. Yeah.
Interesting. That's cool. I think I'm not 100% sure, but that might be a little bit more bar than most people do. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of guys are between about an inch, marking the bar, they're like at 1.5 inches to 1.75 inches or so.
So if this was the bar, it would set up and about there, and then it would, this finger's barely even like doing anything. Most of the work for me is coming off this finger.
Yep.
And it locks in and it kind of sets in that pistol grip. So if you were there, you could see that finger is still on there.
Still on there. Interesting. I have to like examine it next time I'm actually holding it to see where it is.
Yeah.
But cool. So you hit the 12-inch spike. What other big bends were you doing at that time? Would you say that was your peak? Like, I know you're coming back to doing some bending right now, but.
That was probably the peak at the length. Because I wasn't able to find anything in the 14-inch range. I know that there's rumor of 14-inch bars being out there that were spikes.
Wow.
And Greg Matana, I think is how you pronounce it. I may be butchering his last name, and I apologize. Eric Moss's original mentor. I think you interviewed Eric.
I did,
He apparently, when I heard, had 12-inch bars, or 14-inch bars by 3/8. But I don't know who to get in touch with to see if they even have them.
Yeah.
But I'd love to get a hold of one or a couple of them and kind of experiment and see what happens. I checked David Horn's site. He has 14-inch bars, not spikes. Which in that case, I just buy 3/8 stock and cut it down to 14.
Yeah.
Maybe go there one day. We'll see. It's I will tell anybody that tries to do 10 and 12 and longer stock, be very careful. Because of the bend radius, it's actually going to drive back up into your throat and it's going to ride all the way up your neck. And I would finish a session and my neck would be all cut up and bruised up. And it took some time to get used to it, like hurt to swallow for a few days after bending them when you first start.
Yeah.
It's probably similar to being choked out the first few times.
I was going to say.
Where you get just pressed in on that area.
I'm very, very familiar with what that feels like. And I would always fall for it too, which is funny. It's like, if it was a hard gi class and we were learning like, you know, gi chokes and stuff, I'd go home and the next morning I'd wake up and be like, oh, God damn it, I'm getting sick. And then I'd realize like, oh, no, just my throat's damaged from training.
Yep. That's definitely something. And even with the galvanized bars, like a lot of times the stuff you'll find at Home Depot and Lowe's will be galvanized. And so it just shoots stuff everywhere and it will, it'll tear you up if you're not careful.
Yep. Guys have been having some issues with bolts snapping on them up in that position. Did you ever have any issue with anything snapping?
I've seen someone post something about that. All right. And I'll give my opinion on that in a second.
Yeah.
But the only thing I've ever had snap was someone handed me a 60, what's the equivalent of a 60D penny for this or nail. And it had ridges on it and I had never seen it. So I hit it. And as soon as I hit it, it just snapped in half and it went up inside of my throat, sliced me open. Yeah. Thankfully it was just like a surface scratch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was the only thing I've ever snapped on my neck.
Uh-huh.
I've snapped bolts and stuff on my legs and wrenches, but nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to what you were saying with the bolt snapping with that threaded area, on a lot of those things, if you're gripping too low, in that area, say this is your thread from about here down. That's a long thread. But if you're only on that part and you're trying to bend from there, which is on those two fingers, like that's already a reduced surface area. It's already weakened in that area, so to say. And you go to hit it, that area is going to snap first. Because if you look at a lot of bigger bolts and people bend them, you'll get deflection. But in the threaded area, it actually bent a little bit before the whole bar bends, or when the bar bends, it's curved. So that would be my thought process on why that might be happening to them.
So
you choke up on the bar.
Exactly. Get your ring finger on there. It's kind of scary to think. It's like, and if that's in your mind at all, you're not going to be able to lay into the bar to the level that you need to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you just bought some Harito bolts I saw on Instagram, and you're coming back to bending a little bit. So what's your bending schedule looking like these days?
Right now, I just spend one day a week on Sundays. I get down and go to the gym and take them with me. Or I actually have them on a big giant tool bag, leave them there in the closet, and just go after it for about an hour, hour and a half, and then shut her down.
Are you just double overhand at this time, or do you still like mess around with other styles at all?
Right now I'm just doing double overhand. Just cause like I know that's what I'm the most comfortable with and most familiar with. Eventually I'll start playing with some other stuff. Like I've done some reverse, especially have you ever seen the guys when they like tie the bolts together or the nails together in like a little pattern?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like doing those in that position because you can gauge from the in the reverse, right? Or because you can kind of almost dictate where you want to put the bend, the initial kink, and then get them to about just inside 90, so you can lock them, and then you can do the spinning of them and tie them together.
Cool. Yeah. The David Horan Steel Shredder competition that started and then concludes, I think February 28th, is going to be a brutal one. It's an entirely unbraced snap at eye level up here. So, and I think it's two or three bars, and then taking another thinner bar and breaking it into four pieces unbraced, I believe, as well. Okay. So that's going to be a very brutal one. Hard shoulder pump on that one for sure.
Totally. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting, a lot of like minute finger positions, kind of like gauge, where, especially on that four piece.
Yep. I recently got some 60D nails that are, I don't know if they're galvanized or what the deal is with them, but they're just a little bit easier, something between a timber spike and like one of the hard 60Ds that you come across. Mm-hmm. And one day just for something fun to do. And this is one thing I like to hear from other people about this too, is just like, I feel like there's so many facets of steel bending. And if you add the snapping in there, it's like, if you're bored with one thing or you're getting burnt out on one thing, there's so much else to do. And it reminds me of like grappling in that way, where it's like, I'll never be without some way to train. You know, I really enjoy that. But what I was getting at is I just took those easier 60s and snapped them into three pieces one day. It was the only time I'd ever like done a more than one snap and a nail, and it presented a lot of different challenges. It was cool. It was not unbraced. It was using the leg crush. Absolutely.
So one of the things I'd give you like the challenge on that is like, so you can turn it into an S curve.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Into an S and then crush it down into an S.
Yep. I got
it'd be interesting with the 60.
Yeah. I'm going to try that. I did do one that, so I set out to snap one in four because, that's a roster on David Horn's grip feet page. And that was not going well. So then I just tried it I had the three kinks in it. So then I just made it go like in a spiral somewhat, you know what I'm saying? Like just like a fish hook, but then it came back around. And that was very difficult too. But have you had that experience with this stuff? Is just like where you feel like there's so many avenues to take with it that it just like keeps you interested, right?
Oh, totally. It's the only reason I took time off over the last year and a half basically was I remodeled my house last year.
Nice.
And so all my stuff was in storage because I was staying with the in-laws.
All right.
And like I didn't want to keep that stuff all over the place, carry it with me.
Yeah.
So pretty much that's why I took time away.
Yeah.
But no, like totally agree with you. Like, you can come up with all kind of crazy things you can get into.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 30-foot chain that I built. I've been making out of grade 2 5/16 over the years.
Nice.
You know, you just bend them down and you crush them until they touch, and then they'll pop back open about 1/8 to 1/4 inch, and you just hook them.
Cool.
And then that box of spirals that I told you about, I made a chain out of those as well, because you can spin them. Like, once you bend them, if you bend them off center, so, you know, like the tip, the pointy part's below the head.
Yeah.
You can put another one in there and you can rotate it so it locks it.
Oh, cool.
And then you crush that together and you can just weave those things. I think I had like a 5 or 6 foot chain going with that at one point.
Oh, man. Send me a picture of that. That'd be cool.
I have to find it. I don't know where it's at.
But
so you can get into all kind of fun stuff with this, man. Like, mm-hmm. get creative. That's why the scrolling is so much fun. It's like, you can just make all kind of elaborate designs and whatever, and twist and turns.
So have you always been that way with your other strength training? Like, so for example, that's getting into Bud Jeffries and seeing the way he is and then speaking to him, like, really made a big impact on my training and my life, honestly. Like, the way he just approaches, like, things with just making it difficult but making it fun and not being so serious about, like, I don't know, he just, like, he was so cool to talk to, and it's just like, it really changed the way I, like, think about training, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've followed Bud off and on for a few years now myself. When I was younger, it was like, must pick up heavyweight every single day of life.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as I've aged in the last, I'm 37 now.
Okay.
And the last 7 or 8 years, it's just kind of like, how strong do I need to be in order to accomplish the things I want to accomplish in the weight room?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I just generally, for the most part, I probably want run like one hard training cycle a year, maybe two.
Okay.
Like, and I say the hard, I mean, like, that's like a 12-week block, maybe once a year. Most of the time I keep my training to like 4 and 6 and 8 week blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I do a ton more kettlebell stuff now than I ever have.
Yeah.
During COVID, I kind of had, because being I had my own little gym, and it's a mom and pop style place, it's about 2,000 square feet. I can go there and just work out by myself and lock the doors.
Yeah.
And I started chasing. Are you familiar with the Beast kettlebell is? 48 kilograms.
I've heard of it. I'm not too familiar. Yeah.
It's 48 kilos, which is about 105 to 106 pounds.
Yeah.
And I decided it was like, I wanted to press two of them.
Nice.
And so that was my goal. So I spent 6 weeks training for that.
Cool.
That was fun. It was interesting. It kept it entertaining.
Yeah.
And then when I wasn't there, I have some Atlas stones and stuff in my backyard that I just picked up and carried around.
Awesome. Yeah.
We got shut down for 2 months. Mm-hmm. Dead, nothing going on. That was kind of my day. You know, like, have fun, just go play.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most fun I've had training like that in years.
Yeah.
Because, like, I just could relax and just do whatever I felt like that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like, so I'm 35, similar age, and it's like, with the intensity of this bending stuff, you know, like, I had this breakthrough because I was really burning myself out hard. Like, I did a thing for Noah's Army, feet, where I snapped 24 grade 8 bolts in a row. Right. And,
nice.
And there was an untaken position on David Horn's page for what he called the silver dozen, which was snapping 12, grade 8s. And I wanted to double that just to, like, make it something cool and a challenge. So I did that, and I swear it took me like a couple weeks to recover, but I was just in my mind saying, like, nope, you're fine. Like, don't be a wuss about this. And I would push myself through these trainings. And then finally, through talking to my coach and some other people, it's like, it clicked in my mind that was like, oh, when I did jiu-jitsu every day for 2 hours, that wasn't competitive jujitsu. That was just rolling around and having fun, you know? That I could never do 2 hours of competition style jujitsu every day. So it was like, with the bending, which is essentially, most times I'm not really just going down there to do stuff I've already done a bunch of times before. There is some pushing of the envelope, right? So that's essentially a competitive whatever journey for my body, you know? So it's like, and if I'm trying to do that every other night, I was burning myself out bad. So I'm trying to work in some more active recovery and also just like limit the bending to like twice a week or something.
That's awesome that you realize that. Cause I have a couple young trainers that I've been mentoring over the last 2 years, and the hard thing, and I was like these guys, it was like bang head against wall, the wall breaks.
Yeah.
And you know, and these guys were like, and I'm like, learn from my mistakes. It's like, you can only do it for so long, and program your lifts off your true competition style max. Like, you got to keep in mind, like, you've been mentally prepping and physically prepping for this one day, and you hit an all-time PR. So let's say it's a 400 pound deadlift or 400 pound back squat, you know, whatever it is for these guys.
Yep.
And then they go, all right, I got to program all my numbers off that number.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. Like, you're just asking for injuries, especially if you're a natural lifter, like no gear, no drugs, nothing like that.
Right.
So let's take 90% of that number.
Mm-hmm.
And then do all your numbers off that.
Yeah.
So 90% of 400, I'm thinking, was that like 380?
Yeah.
Something around there. And then take percentages back from there. So like, because you can't keep up with your competition numbers.
Right.
Like, you're just going to keep just burning yourself out. Yeah. You might be able to do it for a couple months, a couple years, depending on your age and where you're at.
Yeah.
But like you said, you just had a new kid.
Yeah.
So like your sleep probably is not great. You're probably not like resting, you're not eating like you should.
Yep. It's a tough mental thing. And as a trainer, I'd definitely like to hear you expand on this a little more. It's just like you said, you can't just bang your head against the wall. Like, I think especially if you mix something as intense neurologically or however you want to call it to as bending into the mix, it's like, you can't just do this sort of like macho thing of like, I'm just going to train through it. I don't care. Like, I don't care what my body feels like. I'm going to just go train. It's like, especially if you're in the mid-30s or whatever, like I feel like the mental toughness I thought I had I have it. I mean, whatever, like I know I should, I guess I know that by now at 35 or whatever, you know, but it's like, that shouldn't drive you to injure yourself or to take you out of the things you love longer. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I would agree with you. Like, because at the end of the day, if you get injured, you get hurt. Yeah. You might've been going crazy for 6 months, a year, and got super strong really fast. But if you keep going at that speed, eventually you're going to get injured. And how long does it take you to recover from that injury? And so how far did you fall back? And then do you ever actually get close, or how much further ahead do you get of where you were? Mm-hmm. So you have to keep that in mind. So it's like, is it worth it?
Yeah.
So we all try to get to from point A to point B as fast as possible, but we should slow down and think about it as a journey.
Yeah.
What does this journey look like? Because like I said, when I did my red nail, I was all amped up for that day. I remember it was a Sunday. I had some friends that all came in to watch me do this because they were like, they'd never seen it done. And literally it was over in like 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that was very lackluster in my mind. Like the journey, the build up to that and all the cool bends I had done along the way, what meant so much more than that day, that bend. Like, I still have it. I framed it with a certificate because I thought it was really cool and hung it in the gym for a while.
Yeah.
But like, that was like 5 seconds of a 6 month journey.
Yeah.
So it's the same concept. Like, how much time is it worth to recover, to get better in order to get back to where you were if you don't just take your time?
Yeah. That's been a theme for sure. So I had Carl Donaty who on a couple of weeks ago, who's been actively bending for like 12 years, which you really don't hear anyone doing that. And then I had James Fuller, Strongman Archaeology, on the other day. That one's yet to come out. But there's just been this theme, and it was good because I needed to hear it personally, of just like playing in the long game with this stuff. You know, it's like, I enjoy it so much, I don't have to get it all done in 6 months, you know?
No, it's still new for you. Take your time, man.
Yeah. And the other thing that I was thinking about it was just along the lines of, just enjoying the process and just not having to get it all done, you know? And the fact that you said like all the build up to the Red Nail and then it was over, you know, is like, this comes up a lot on the show. And it's just like, I think it's all of us as competitors to some degree, like it's fleeting, you know, the glory is fleeting. It's sort of just like, I've told the story before of just like first jiu-jitsu competition I ever won, you know, I was on cloud nine for like 6 months, probably, you know, just like so happy.
Yeah.
The next one I won, maybe it was a month. The next one, it was like by the time of the last one, right before lockdown, I think I was happy, like got some takeout. And like by the end of the night, it was over, you know? It's just like, and that was with the first red I ever closed. Like as it was closing, I was like, all right, I got to figure out how to do this in one pad.
Like, yeah.
It's just never, you can never like be satisfied, you know?
I think that's human nature. Like we're taught to do that or to be that way. It's just constantly like, oh, like what's next? Like, oh, you did that. And like, what are you gonna do now? And you're like, wait, I gotta enjoy this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, find time to enjoy like what you did, like getting through it, celebrate it, have fun.
Yeah.
And then go back to the drawing board. Like, right, what are we gonna do now?
Yeah.
But give it 24 hours at least.
Definitely, right? So outside of bending, you're bending one day a week. What's your other strength training and conditioning stuff look like these days?
So it's interesting. Like, so I have a buddy who just retired from the military and, you know, he'd been to where he'd been stationed at. He kind of let himself get out of shape because his family was still here and everything, and he hadn't been doing anything. So we run a program called the Amazing 12 at our, at our gym. And it's a body transformation program, but it's actually a performance program that has a body transformation aspect to it.
Cool.
And so I've spent the last 12 weeks, we're on week 12 right now with that. And so he's about to finish and I did it with him to kind of help motivate, plus gave me a reason to do it again.
Cool.
So I'm about to finish that. And after that, I'm taking a week off from training other than bending on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to start up with some bell stuff the first week of January.
So what's that?
Weekend after Christmas.
What's the 12-week program entail? Is that a combination of lifting and conditioning type stuff? And is there like a diet aspect with it too? Or
yeah, there's it's got all those parts to it. It's got a three-phase nutrition program that comes with it that we use. And then you lift 5 days a week and you do 5 days of conditioning outside of the gym. Whether it's all, a lot of times it's either rowers or sprints.
Nice.
For most people. It's created by a guy, Paul McElroy, out of Ireland. Awesome guy. You should reach out to him eventually. And
cool.
He was a bender as well. He's on the Red Nail list.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Cool. So you said sprinting or rows?
Yeah.
Nice.
Or sprinting, running, rows.
Yeah.
I do a lot of the rower. I'm way bigger than I was when I was in college, when I was running track every day of my life for 8 years. I ran from high school through college.
Yeah.
So I was 185 pounds when I was to 190 pounds when I was competing in track. And now I hang out around that 210, 215 range, depending on where I'm at in training, sometimes 205 or less.
Yep.
So, and so my legs just take a beating. I always had issues with shin splints when I was running.
Okay. Yeah. You know what's funny about running? It's like no matter how conditioned I've ever been for like jiu-jitsu and wrestling and all that, it's like running is still like just wrecks me. You know, like even if I was there's been times when I've been able to run like, you know, 3 or 4 miles like without any big issue. Not that that's some big goal, but like our big thing. But it's amazing to me that just like how crazy of an exercise it is, like it just gets you, you know. It's like,
well, it's interesting when you say that, like it for me it's like swimming. Like you put me in the pool and I'm like negative buoyant. I'm like trying not to drown the entire time. I'm trying to swim.
And I
trained it and got good.
Yeah,
let me rephrase that. I wasn't good, I was efficient.
Sure.
You know, I could do the 500 yards and pass the swim test for lifeguarding and all that, but I was never going to be competitive at swimming.
Yeah,
And it goes back to the whole thing where, you know, you're good at what you do.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, you know, you go drive fence posts on a farm for a summer. The first few days, you're going to be like, what is going on with my body?
Yeah.
And then by the end of the summer, you're like, this is nothing, you know?
Yep. So. Yeah, it's true. That's true. I always think maybe that I'll like get into running, but I never actually have like crossed that barrier.
Yeah. I only did it because I got semi-paid to do it, so to say. They helped get me through college.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I have been enjoying? So one, David Horn's last steel shredder was a bolt snap while wearing a pack that had 30K in it or something like that.
Okay.
And yeah, that just like put me on this path of just like going out and taking like these 2 mile walks with this pack on. That's been something that I really enjoy. Like, enjoy is kind of a weird word, but I just feel like it's good training.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Like, I'm a big fan of, I call it rucking.
Yeah.
Basically what you're doing.
Yep.
I enjoy rucking. And then there's a book from the 70s, maybe early 80s called Heavy Hands.
Oh yeah.
And it's all about like walking with like 2 and 3 pound dumbbells.
Oh, cool.
Nothing heavier than that, because when you start getting too heavy with in that motion, it's like boxers who try to box with weights. People think that they do that.
Yeah.
It actually throws off your gait just enough that it could mess up. If you're an athlete and training for that, it could really mess up some stuff.
Interesting.
But yeah, to give and walking backwards and forwards and just all over the neighborhood with it. But I'm a big fan of those things.
Interesting. You know,
like, walking is huge. People don't do it enough. And as much as we think running is an innate thing, like, I've seen some people that should never run. I'm like, what is going on? Like, motor patterning is not there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like retraining how to do that is, it takes time. And most people don't want to learn that. They just go run and like, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people do.
Yep. So something about bending, I like to get everybody's thoughts on this one, is like, there's something just so rewarding. Like, yeah, you could set up your camera and go do a deadlift PR and like I guess you have something to show for it, but there's nothing quite like having this piece of steel that was straight and now it's bent. So it's like, that must have been something you enjoy. I think all benders enjoy that.
Yeah, you know, it's like you've imposed your will upon this object and it's never going to be the same again, no matter what you do to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's there, it's done, it's permanent to some, permanently changed forever. The weights are still the weights.
Yep.
Unless you break them or break the bar for some reason, somehow or another, which I've seen.
Wow.
But very rare. Like, very, very rare. Like, it's probably most, not always, but a lot of times if you break a bar, it's a crappy bar and the collars pop off because they're held on with bolts that have come unscrewed. Or it's like a metal plate and you dropped it on a cement floor and it cracks.
Yeah.
That just happens over use of time.
Sure.
But very rare does that happen, right? You know, like, yeah, you hit the PR, but that weight's still the same.
Yeah.
But that object that you just bent is no longer what it was 30 seconds, 5 minutes ago, no matter what it is. It's now permanently disfigured.
Yeah.
And you did that. No one else.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And how about, like, I'd like to hear everybody's kind of take like this, because I think it's kind of what we're all, if you're messing around with grip or you're messing around with bending, it's sort of like we're developing that functional strength, the farm strength, old man strength. There's lots of terms for it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what's your thoughts on that, especially as someone with experience as a trainer like yourself?
Well, you know, everybody walks into a gym and you learn how to lift weights, correct? Like, hopefully you learn how to lift it safely and correctly. But when at the end of the day, your kid falls down, skins his knee, and he's laying on the ground crying, and you got your 30 pound pack on, you got to bend over with really horrible form and pick him up.
Yeah.
And he's like all over the place screaming and hollering, most likely. and that's what real strength's like, you know. That's what you need to be a usable strength. And because I got my young trainers at the gym, love these guys, but they're slowly starting to figure it out. Like, yeah, they're super strong, but I took one of them out to the Highland Games field and it was just like, wait, what do you call what you just did? You know?
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to use and apply their strength, because they never learned how to be athletic with the strength or functional with the strength.
Interesting.
And it's interesting to see, like, like, you come from a jiu-jitsu background, like, that's pretty a lot of a body awareness. That's where kind of where I was going. Like you have tons of body awareness, which probably has helped speed up your journey in this to some level versus a weightlifter who they know grip the bar, stand up, put it down.
Yeah.
Go in the bench press up and down. Like, how do you actually apply and use that strength? Like, you know, like you, who are you going to call to come help you move your couch and move out of your house and load a truck?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the guy who can actually lift stuff, not the strongest guy most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's like, I didn't really know what to call it, but I knew there was different types of strength because I felt it firsthand. You know, I've been grappling people since like 08. So it's like, it wasn't the guy that was shredded all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's an animal, like, of course, that's not fake stuff. But the fact that there was like certain guys that maybe just looked like thick or whatever, maybe not even, maybe skinny.
Yeah.
And they grab a hold of me and I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like what? And then I go, all right, what's your background? Like I always like get into it and they're like, oh, I was like a stonemason or like a mechanic or whatever. Like, and then there's just a little funny thing. Sometimes if they say no to all that, then I go, all right, well, did you wrestle in high school? No. Did you play football? No. And the last one I always ask is, I go, how many brothers do you have?
Yeah.
And they're like 10, I'm the youngest. And I'm like, okay, now this makes sense.
That makes a difference. So are you familiar with Dan John?
No.
Coach, you should check out Dan John. With the journey you're on, as far as like what we've been discussing as we've aged, you know, we're still young. He just he's in his 60s now, but relatively speaking, we're still young to him.
Yeah, sure, definitely.
You'll get a kick out of his stuff. Check him out. But I love his saying. It's like I would rather. His thing is, what is it? Looks like Tarzan, but plays like Jane. Yeah, so it's that concept. I'm like, you might have the six pack and the bulging muscles, but you're not strong, bud.
Yeah,
you're good for about 10 seconds, and then you're done.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's really interesting because, I mean. Yeah, it's, and that stuff's great, of course. Like everybody like most people want to look good and stuff like that. But it's just, I think Don used the term first, but it applies to everything we're talking about. It's just being strong in all angles or weird angles. Yeah. You know, it's like just. Do you think there's a point where you could be like I said with my own training, like Bud is really. So I'm doing a lot of weird stuff, but I'm also doing like the linear stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think you can get too lost in the weeds as far as like getting too weird? Like people shouldn't neglect the traditional stuff, right? You should be pressing, you should be pulling, and you should be squatting, right?
Let's preface this by saying in the early 2000s, like the 2005, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007 range, the fitness industry, not the strength and conditioning industry, but the fitness industry went extremely functional, with quotations. We're going to call it crazy functional. It's like, you just because you can doesn't always mean you should.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite statements to tell my clients and my students. But in that early 2000 range, we got to the point where like people were trying to balance on stability balls while pushing and pulling with a cable blindfolded. I'm like, are you an Olympic skier that's doing like flips and twists and flying through the air and trying to land, 30 feet in the air? If not, then why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, like I get balance training. Yes. Stand on one foot, you know, learn how to fall, learn how to stand up from laying on the floor. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But Bosu balls and like balancing on this while trying to swing a kettlebell, which drives me insane when I see it because it makes no sense to do. But we got, it was really extremely functional. And that's when I first got into the industry when I got out of school and I was seeing that and I was like, what is going on? Yeah. I just came from like being in like a strength and conditioning gym, lifting with athletes every day of my life for the last 15 years, so to say.
Yeah.
And then I walk into that and I'm like, what am I seeing?
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is yes. But I think we're slowly seeing the merge back together of the two, but as, in our world now where we're coming from this, yes, we can get lost. Like, you know, like, and I don't want to pick on CrossFit, but they're the easiest one to go after. And when we say this is like, it's just random acts of violence a lot of times. And like you're never going to get good at anything if you don't practice for something.
Yes. Yeah.
So pick one thing, practice, get to that efficiency level that you feel like you've met and where you want to be, and then find the next thing. But, you know, still go practice this occasionally.
Right.
But move to the next goal and progress and find what that is. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yep. Would you say, so just in the realm of bending, right? Mm-hmm. In your opinion, is it important to be strong in general? Like, would you recommend just for all the people out there, potentially new guys, newer than myself and otherwise, is it important to maintain general strength as well as bending strength, say?
I think yes. Just to be, you know, blanket statement, yes. Mm-hmm. Because like, if you are strong in the gym, lifting weights, you got a great deadlift, you can swing kettlebells, you can snatch them, you can press them, you can good bench press, pull up, you're going to have naturally strong grip strength. Mm-hmm. All right. So that, and then you're actually going to know how to apply tension throughout the body and use it.
Yes.
By applying that tension and actually physically moving objects. So when you actually go to an object like bending, that general skill will transfer over.
Mm. Yeah.
Like you already know how to like, oh, I got to press with my legs. I got to squeeze with my glutes. I got to brace with my abs and I got to drive this way. So your general strength's there. So it helps with that applied strength to bending.
Gotcha. But, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like athlete strength. Like, you know, their sport is X, football.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be strong enough to play football, not world-class powerlifter strong.
Right.
You know, like at the end of the day, they make money playing football for 3 hours or whatever it is by the time you watch it on TV.
Yeah.
So that's their sport. We lift just enough to be good at that sport.
Yeah.
And in the off season, we can do a little extra and do whatever we want, but keep the sport as the focus.
Yeah. That's what's been tough. It's, I wish I was, cause with the new baby and stuff, like even though mm-hmm. gyms have opened back up, I'm still not back to grappling. Right. So I don't mm-hmm. have that thing to keep me on track as far as like, it's not important if I deadlift 5 pounds, you know, like more than whatever. It's just important that I want to be a strong, efficient grappler, you know? So the fact that I don't have that lab to test that stuff out, I've definitely gotten lost in the hunting of numbers in the last few months.
Yeah. And this is kind of the time to do it. Cause look at this is your off season.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like definitely. I'm off season, I'm going to get strong and as powerful as I possibly can.
Yeah.
So that when I get back on the mat, then that's your sport. You're back at that.
Yeah.
And that you just have to keep in mind, like, all right, I'm back to training 3, 4, or 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. How am I going to change my strength training?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to cut that to 2 days a week, 3 days a week? What can I physically afford?
Yep.
You know,
how about we sort of touched on it. I want to get a couple more questions and then we'll get to the questions people sent in as, did you experience any injuries from bending?
You know, the typical stuff, like my hands, like especially bending big bars, like this joint, both fingers hurt, the palms hurt. There's a nerve bundle in the palm of your hand in this little part right here.
Yeah.
When I was learning to crush and close, I put these fingers on both hands, pinky and the ring finger, to sleep. And I think the right hand was asleep for like 3 days.
I've experienced finally
came back.
Yep.
You know, and you just have to toughen that skin up. You know, you have to build up some tissue there. A little bit of tendonitis in the elbows, but I've always dealt with that from pressing heavy bells, because when you're working with bells, the heavier ones, they either want to pull you open or lay on you.
Yeah.
And you have to, what we call gooseneck it. So you have to hold it like so.
Yep.
And that's that arm wrestler position. So you end up with tendonitis in the elbow. And then heavy pull-ups have always caused that issue. So so I knew that was going to happen at some point. It just took, depending on when.
Yeah. And what about some exercises we could give to the people to use to avoid, say they're hunting the red nail. So they're doing a lot of double mm-hmm. overhand, a lot of volume. What's some stuff they should be doing to kind of balance out their training to maybe avoid injury?
One of the things that I used a lot and still play with is, you know, like the rubber band extenders, mm-hmm. like the opening position, because you spend a lot of time gripping and flexing. Work some of those extenders. I'm a big believer in back training for okay. that, for bending, because we spend so much time coming this way.
Yeah.
Especially in the double overhand, that we get so much pump through the chest and the triceps and the lat. A lot of mid-back work for me, trying to keep my thoracic able to move the way I want it to, being able to stabilize the shoulder. That's one of the things I will talk about in a minute with the long bars, if you want to talk about those still.
Yeah.
Was like, I see a lot of benders who do this and just try to start the bar.
Yeah.
And they're putting so much work through those traps and everything that they're actually not actually able to use their, stabilize their shoulder. So when you're up here and you try to come down, a lot of times it comes down like this in a weird way and you end up with some tendonitis development. So learning how to stabilize those shoulders is a big thing.
Okay. And you actually touched on it before and I missed it, but you said creating body tension, and that's something that both of my strength coaches that I've worked with, when they're critiquing my lifts, they're always saying more body tension. And it's funny because maybe jujitsu must not be a thing where I create a lot of that or something, but that's certainly something I've struggled with. And I know I'll be a stronger bender when I can get in the habit of harnessing this. Mm-hmm. I'm getting better with it. But what are some cues that you could suggest for people to maybe get a little bit more, get their body more engaged and create some more body tension? People have told me to like grip the floor with my feet and like I'm going to get checked, like a punch to the gut, like brace like that. So I'm just trying to collect all the things I can to get the best body tension I can.
Gotcha. It's one of those hard things. Like it's better if I'm able to touch you, and that's what I teach, because you know, it's transferring a force.
Yeah.
From like, you have all the ability in the world of your pinky toe to crush the gold nail right now. Uh-huh. If you know how to apply the right type of tension through the body.
Okay.
And we all have leaks. So no matter what we think about. So it's like, so imagine you're standing straight up, you're vertical, and someone puts their hands on your collarbone and your low back. And we got you kind of like this. This is your collarbone up top, your low back.
Yeah.
And someone goes to push you like that and you just kind of collapse and you fold backwards.
Yeah.
So the goal would be to do is to create as much tension, grip the floor, squeeze the quads. Think about trying to root into the floor, locking down the glutes at the same time. It's going to be very crude, but think about trying to pull your butthole to your belly button. Or if you're a dude, pull your nuts into your stomach.
Yeah.
So you race down really hard, lock in the lats, grip the hands, squeeze super tight. So then when I go to push you on your shoulder or your collarbone or your low back, it's like pushing against a brick wall.
Okay.
That's one of the ways I teach tension. You can also do it from the shoulder and the hip on sideways.
Okay, cool.
That's and learn to hold that for 5 to 10 seconds.
Okay.
It, for most people, it's not, you shouldn't hold it for longer than that, because it's the Valsalva effect aspect. If you're familiar with that.
I'm not.
Well, you probably do it every time when you strain, you get constipated.
Oh, okay.
The bathroom, you're like, you squeeze and you're trying to push it out. Uh-huh. Same concept. Or if you're trying to push your heavy car or something, you're like, strain. It's a Valsalva effect. So everything kind of locks down and you get blood pressure goes through the roof.
Oh, okay.
So you have to be just careful with that part.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, that's something like every time, you know, it's just like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like of just trying to stay relaxed through like uncomfortable positions in jujitsu and not trying to muscle everything, you know, until the time is right to use the muscle or whatever. But even though I've had some strong lifts and stuff like that and stuff that I'm proud of, I know I'm not, like, I'm still very much a beginner, you know, like, I know I'm not activating as much as I even could do if I get that body tension and bracing stuff going, and in bending too, of course.
Yeah. In jiu-jitsu, you don't want to get tension that much tension until you lock in like a joint lock or something like that.
Yeah.
Because if you do it too soon, it's a very, very taxing thing to do to the body.
And you're going to wear out. I think that must be what it is.
Yeah. So when you finish this, hop on the floor in a push-up position.
Okay.
rip the floor, lock everything like we talked about, and imagine trying to pull the floor up to you.
Okay.
Wow. And like just slow and controlled, like you're like trying to pull it in, and then you're trying to push the floor away from you, not trying to push your body.
Yeah.
And there's so much tension you can create throughout your entire body.
Okay.
Like try to feel everything firing as you go.
Okay.
Yeah. Just kind of get that mental awareness and see how that translates over.
Cool. Thank you. All right. So let's see. My friend Devin Hoover asked about how do you get started bending such long bars double overhand? We kind of got into this, but is there anything else you want to get into?
So slow, take your time, wrap it up, start with a 10 inch bar and work on pulling into position. The big thing with 10 inch bars and longer, and even in that 7 inch range, is so we have to be careful when we get into position. Turn sideways so you can kind of see the position and people watching it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people want to set up and do this. Those elbows went back.
Yeah.
And you think that's powerful, but that's not going to give you the most leverage because you still have to get your arms out and around the bar.
Okay.
So you got to learn how to spread the chest and reach with the elbows. So you got to learn how to open the back. Is that making sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like you want to hug the bar.
Okay.
Hug around it versus pull back away from it.
Okay.
So that's a, I can,
interesting.
So think of, so put your elbows up and then try to reach to the outside of the wall with your elbows. Try to reach and open your chest. Don't go back, but go out.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Feel your shoulder blades kind of slide out and around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how you learn how to get out. And then you learn how to come around and over the bar.
Cool.
So that's I'll do a video at some point and post it up somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
describe that.
I have my guests usually do like a little tip video for bending. So if you could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Another person from Instagram just said training methodology. We kind of got into this a little bit, but is there anything else specific to bending or otherwise that you want to get into?
Pick something and be consistent.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Commit to it for at least 6 to 8 weeks. It all works.
Awesome.
To some level,
And then Don asked about those dinners with the old time strongmen, and he said that you might have spent some time at the Association of Old Time Barbell and Strongmen.
Yeah, so we'll hit Slim's dinner. That was an awesome experience. It was a big cookout. That was my first hooray into seeing a lot of those guys and meeting a lot of the old guys, the old guard, for lack of a way to call it.
Yeah.
And Slim's dungeon and museum is
cool.
It is quite the experience. It is definitely kind of one of those pilgrimages. If you're something you're truly passionate about, you should find someone to get you the chance to go see that.
Cool.
And then so AOBS dinner, Association of Old Time Barbell and Strongmen, I think it is. I got to go to the very last one.
Wow. Cool.
They are not, as far as I know, it's not coming back. They didn't do it this year.
Uh-huh.
That's another place you're going to meet a lot of the old guard people that you, like Mighty Adams, one of his sons was there.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's still alive.
Cool.
Was there. You're familiar with Mighty Adams.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, cool. That's where your lineage comes from, so to say.
Yeah.
He started all this. If you haven't read the book, check it out.
Oh, no, I haven't read the book. I've seen the documentary. I got to get the book.
Yeah, the book's amazing. It's interesting. You'll like it.
Cool.
The dinner was awesome, man. I couldn't say enough cool things about it. You know, I got to perform in the pre-show with all the up and rising stars.
Cool.
So I did, at that event, I think I did a series of bars of spikes. I did the 12-inch bar there. Don't quote me on this. I think I'm been told I'm only the third person to ever double overhand.
Oh, cool.
12 inch spike.
Wow.
I may be wrong. So
yeah.
But that was what I was told while I was there. So if that's the rumor that I heard recently was in the next couple of years they're gonna come something new.
Oh,
like
wow.
That's gonna come back. But yeah, it's definitely, if they do come back with this one at all, go.
Yeah.
Hands down, like you're going to get to meet people that you've only seen or read about online.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So we're starting to wrap up. It's time for the medley. This is a rapid fire series of questions. If you've listened to the show, you know what it is. So first question is favorite thing to bend.
You know, I really like double overhanding wrenches.
Oh, really?
It's a unique thing. It's weird. It's, I don't know if you've messed with wrenches at all yet, but they are, it's fun. It's just
have you done a 10 inch double over?
I don't think I have. I don't know if I even have 10 inches in my box. I found the place that I found them at, they had 6 and 8. That I felt like I should buy.
Nice. So former guest, JT Straussner, actually, you should check out the challengedude.com. He's got two new certifications, one stainless bar, one cold rolled, both same diameter and length as the Red Nail. And it's a growing roster. I'm on there.
Congratulations.
Don Cummings just got on there. Tommy Jennings, Jan Heller, Stan Sally, and Gil Squeezes Goodman. That's the rest of the roster. So all names that you mostly know. But he did a 10-inch wrench double overhand. And I'm not sure if I've seen anybody else, but I feel like if anyone could, you have the build and the strength to do it for sure. Yeah.
Cool. I like to see if I can find some stuff.
Yeah. All right. Hardest thing to bend for you?
The hardest thing that I've ever messed with that to this day I still look at occasionally when I find it is I had a tack hammer that I was trying to bend.
Wow.
It was probably, I think it was 16 or 18 inches long. And I got it till right outside of 90 and I just could not crush it to save my life. And like I fought with that thing for like 2 hours.
Cool.
And I'd get it and then I'd let off and it would spring back open on me because the bend happened inside the handle and it had all that rubber on it. And it just, that's the one thing that I just look at occasionally. It's like, damn it.
Strongest bending style. I think we know.
It's double overhand for sure.
Weakest style.
I've never done much underhand bending. Like I've played with it only just to kind of fill it, but I've never pushed it. So I would say that is probably my weakest.
Okay, cool. Something outside of strength training, bending, all this world that you like to do.
So pre-COVID, right before it started, my buddy who moved back had gotten me into competitive pistol shooting.
Oh, cool.
And, so that was something I've been learning.
Nice.
It's been quite an experience, and it's, you know, it's an extremely expensive hobby, especially right now. But it was a lot of fun. And
that's cool.
Hopefully everything comes back down in price and I can get back out there and do it some more. But that was my passion there for a little bit. There's like something different.
Yeah. So. Cool to be a white belt at something.
Yeah. It always good to learn.
Yeah. Was that like just targets or were you going through like the maze type things, like the tactical stuff or whatever?
No, none of that. So there's an organization called, and I'm probably going to butcher it, IDPA.
Okay.
I think it's what it is called. But basically it's like they give you a scenario, like they have the target set up and you have to kind of like work through the scenario, but it's in like one giant open bay.
Oh,
there's
cool.
like barricades in your way, but
gotcha.
you're not like clearing rooms or anything like that. Nothing like military.
Yeah. My friend Bruce, out in Colorado, a fellow jiu-jitsu guy, but he's getting into some bending. But at one time he was ranked something. He was very into the competitive pistol stuff. It's pretty amazing.
Okay.
All right. So what's the one bend that got away? Anything else besides the tack hammer that's haunting you?
That guy got from me, and then I would probably just say the gold nail. I was chasing it pretty hard and was, like I said, I was making progress, but so one quick caveat to throw out there, I had never done double wraps on anything in my life until recently.
Okay.
And I was like, I gotta see what this is like.
Yeah.
So I was only ever messing with that in single
wraps.
Yeah. And which, you know, to this day, like I'm probably going to get back to there at some point in time and hopefully chase that thing again.
Nice.
And just bend it, just to put it on tape and say I did it.
Yeah. What'd you think of the doubles? Cause I know some people don't like the way it feels.
I'm to me, it's kind of like wearing gear and powerlifting. I've never done it, but I could imagine it's kind of like that. Like I felt no pain on the initial kink on any bar that I've messed with so far.
Yeah.
And, but I can't feel the position.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I was playing with it on Sunday and I've been, 11/64th or something, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Yep,
whatever's one step up from 5/16th.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, stainless, and I hit it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, what is going on? And like, and I went to go again and like, it wouldn't move. And I'd bent it like 4 inches off center.
Oh, wow.
But like, it was like one, like this, it bent like right here on the bar. Yeah. And like, I had all this. I'm like, oh, because I just couldn't feel it in my hands. It was an interesting feeling. So I would say probably chasing that gold nail was what got away.
Nice. All right. This one throws everybody, but don't overthink it. Yeah. Who's the strongest person you know? This could be someone in the gym. This could be your grandpa. This could be a guy in your town. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just a fun question.
So obviously I know a lot of strong people over the years, but still to this day, the one guy that just blew my mind when I walked into the first time walking into the collegiate weight room, and he's a track guy, he's a thrower. And this guy was doing ass to grass back squats for like 650. And I just sit there and watch this guy. And I'm like, this is what I'm about to go become. Like, I'm going to come hang out with these guys. And then I got to know him. And he's the nicest guy you'd ever meet.
Wow.
But he's all broken now from some other things he's done in life. Accidents in here.
Yeah.
But he was a good friend of mine over the years. And but I just remember seeing that guy and being like, what is going on?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So. All right. How about the best piece of advice you were ever given? This could be about strength or life in general.
Yeah. So at fresh out of college, my first job, they had this speaker come in and set us all down. And the first thing, and the only thing I remember for this entire conversation, I don't know, I was 22. And he's like, you're the sum of the five closest people in your life. Huh. So if you look at where you're at financially, education, lifestyle, whatever it is. And, you're the sum of the five closest people you're around in that environment.
Wow.
And that day I made a lot of changes in life and started making a lot of different pursuits and goals based off that. And I completely changed my lifestyle for the better.
That's cool, man. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. And lastly, what's the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails?
So the funniest reaction. So there, I don't know, 2 years ago now, I got invited to do like present my scroll work at a this Christmas fair for women. I had no clue what I was going to. This lady's like, hey, we heard about your stuff. We want you to come in. And I'm like, all right. So I set all this stuff up and all of a sudden I'm seeing ladies coming with like costume jewelry and artwork and clothes. And I'm like, one of these things is not like anything else here.
Yeah.
And these little old ladies were coming up like, oh, how did you do this? And I told them, they're like, oh my God, no way. And they're like, they're just freaking out. Aren't you going to hurt yourself? And I'm like, no, it'd be fine. I'm okay. But that was one of those environments where I was just like, wow, I can't believe they invited me to do this.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So I took a few things and bent them there too. And they just freaked out. It was
that's hysterical. Awesome. Cool. All right. So in closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
So, I'm going to throw two people out to you. And I think that one of them probably much easier to get in touch with. I would check out Paul McElroy when we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Just because I'd like to hear that guy talk. And then there's another guy. Have you heard of John McGrath?
I have heard that name, or maybe go by on Facebook or something.
Yeah. He's in South Africa right now. That's where he lives. But he's from Ireland as well. But he's one of the old guard of performing strong men.
Nice.
You know, he's taken down like multiple Goliath bars. I think he holds the record for most red nails bent in a minute.
Oh, cool.
So he's a cool guy. I've had communication with him over the years. I would reach out to him. Like, I'd love to hear that guy sit down and chat with you.
Nice. That'd be cool. And do you have a record on the red nail for two hits? Is that a world record?
Yeah, I have a two-hit red nail in Iron Mind red pads as well.
Cool.
Two hits to close. Yeah, I think it was like an inch and three quarters, inch and a two quarter or
That's
half,
awesome.
Something like that. Yeah.
Awesome. We kind of touched on it, but just summarize it a bit. Tips and advice for beginner benders.
So I listened to a couple of the casts, and a lot of people talk about wrapping, which I highly recommend, but learn your setup, you know, learn where the positioning of the bar and how to position it. And then, and if you're not where you think you should be, stand in front of a mirror, video it from the front, and figure out what that optimal setup is.
Yeah. And since you are a trainer, how about guys maybe that are just getting into strength training, tips and advice for those guys too?
Yeah. You know, remember it's a journey. You know, you don't have to set world records tomorrow. Pick something and be consistent. You know, it all works for a little while. And it's just take your time and find what you enjoy and what gives you the most, what lights a fire under you to walk into the gym.
Yeah.
Whether it's kettlebells, barbells, a mix of the two, bodyweight training, whatever it is,
yeah.
Take your time and get a coach so you learn it the right way the first time.
Yeah.
Because fixing it when it's already broken is not fun.
Yeah.
You know, you take 5 steps back to take 1 step forward. No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. It's just as far as methodology, I invested in a big sandbag, like a strongman sandbag. Yeah. That thing I love, man. I use that after the workouts to just like pick it up and squat while bear hugging it or shoulder it or whatever. Like that feels very applicable to moving humans in a grappling sense.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I would tell you, I would throw out to you to look into is stones or Atlas stones.
Yep.
You know, about 125 to 150 pound stone.
Okay.
Hug it and walk around with it.
Cool. Yeah,
that's a different kind of strength right there.
Nice. Actually, like weird enough, through searching for those on eBay. Actually, I saw someone not too far from here, up here in the Hudson Valley in New York, guy that has a mold and makes them. So I'm gonna contact him and get one of those things.
You can buy the molds on Rogue too.
Oh, is that right? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. And where can people find you on social media and stuff?
Instagram, Brett Bracken, Facebook, same thing. Find me on the gym page as well, which is Charleston Kettlebell Club.
It's cool. All right. And lastly, is there any events, brands, or gear that you want to give a shout out before we're done?
Not offhand, you know.
Okay.
I'm not sponsored by anyone. If anybody wants to sponsor me, I'm always open to talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah. No kettlebell sponsor yet.
No. Like I don't compete. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, what was the gym page again? Just so everybody can check that out.
Charleston Kettlebell Club.
Okay, cool. All right. That's it, Brett. Thanks so much, man. I had a blast talking to you, and I'll definitely have you back on in the future. I've been doing these ones where I kind of, after some time goes by, have people back on for a little check-in and see what they've been up to. So we'll do it again.
Sounds great, man. And if anybody wants to reach out to ask questions, man, just hit me up.
All right. Have a good rest of the night.
You too, brother.
Thanks, bud.
Later. Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.